Welcome to Why Is This Good, a podcast by the Naples Writers Workshop. I'm Christine, and I'm here with John. Hey, John.
Hello.
Okay, it's my turn. I picked a story called Button Button. And now that I'm reading that again, I'm like, why is it called that? It's Button, comma, Button. Button Button by Richard Matheson.
Button, who's got the button?
Button Button. Is that from something?
Yeah, I don't know what it's from. I should know.
Button Button, who's got the button?
I just remember this as a thing that people said.
Maybe it's like a game show from the 80s or something.
No, it's like a kid's game. I never played it. I never was aware of the rules of the game. All I know is that phrase was a thing that was said when I was a kid.
I'm trying to look up when this was written.
1970, it appeared in an issue of
Oh,
Playboy in
wow.
June 1970.
Good guess, Christine. I was like, it sounds like the 70s. Okay.
I had to look it up because, well, maybe we'll get into that.
In the morning, as she left the apartment, Norma saw the card halves on the table. Impulsively, she dropped them into her purse. She locked the front door and joined Arthur in the elevator. When she was on her coffee break, she took the card halves from her purse and held the torn edges together. Only Mr. Stewart's name and telephone number were printed on the card. After lunch, she took the card halves from her purse again and scotch taped the edges together. Why am I doing this? She thought. Just before 5, she dialed the number. Good afternoon, said Mr. Stewart's voice. Norma almost hung up but restrained herself. She cleared her throat. This is Mrs. Lewis, she said. Yes, Mrs. Lewis, Mr. Stewart sounded pleased. I'm curious. That's natural, Mr. Stewart said. Not that I believe a word of what you've told us. Oh, it's quite authentic, Mr. Stewart answered. Well, whatever, Norma swallowed. When you said someone in the world would die, what did you mean? Exactly that, he answered. It could be anyone. All we guarantee is that you don't know them, and of course, that you wouldn't have to watch them die. For $50,000, Norma said. That is correct. She made a scoffing sound. That's crazy. Nonetheless, that is the proposition, Mr. Stewart said. Would you like me to return the button unit? Norma stiffened. Certainly not. She hung up angrily. I think I found this just on a list, Googling madly for
Yeah.
short stories. And whatever list I came across, there was a couple others that piqued my interest, and I think I'll return to them. But anyway, this one reminded me almost immediately of the one that we read pretty recently, where the couple, it's sci-fi, the couple's watching their son on TV with like the helmet on, and it's like zapping him.
You're talking about Harrison Bergeron?
Yeah, that guy.
Okay.
They're like, it's like sending like little signals to make everyone dumber and
Oh,
uglier.
it's zapping the guy, not the person on TV. I was thinking of.
But doesn't it remind you of that? Like the tone? It's very similar.
Oh, a little bit. Yeah. This reminded me when I read it, I was like, this feels like a Twilight Zone episode.
Yes.
So I
And then it
looked up,
says, yeah.
he wrote Twilight Zone episodes.
Yes. Yeah. So like 1970, it was published literally in 1970, like we just discussed, but like it feels very of that time and like that sensibility and like what people were hoping for from these kinds of stories, where it's just a really interesting kind of sci-fi premise. They're almost always like really dark, and it lets you just like explore this one at least. You're exploring just the worst of human, I don't know, tendencies. It's like, are we inherently good or evil? Like when no one's looking, like would we do these things to benefit
Yeah.
ourselves? Yeah, so that makes so much sense that it's also a Twilight Zone episode. Well, or by that writer.
He also wrote I Am Legend.
Oh,
The
really?
yeah, and
Well,
yeah, well, he wrote, I watched the very beginning of the Vincent Price one, but didn't get very far into it. Also, the Foley work was terrible in that movie. It was very strange. But he also wrote What Dreams May Come,
Okay.
which I haven't watched it for a long time, but I really liked that movie. So I was like, I want to read that book. I didn't realize it was a book.
So Stephen King has listed Matheson as a creative influence.
Oh yeah. When he died, like all kinds of people were praising him. He sounds like he had a good life as a writer.
Right. Must be nice. It also reminded me like of There Will Come Soft Rains, just like that tone.
Yes. Yeah, that was Bradbury. Yeah.
Right. But I feel like there's something about like sci-fi of a certain time period where it all felt this way, kind of like cold and distant, like the narrative. I don't know what I'm just trying to describe.
It had that like kind of Hemingway-ish style,
Yeah.
like the Vonnegut style, very austere, if you will,
Yeah.
where there wasn't a lot of fluff to it. It was just like, here it is.
Yeah. So what I wrote, and I didn't read this section, but this is the first paragraph of the story. It says the package was lying by the front door, a cube-shaped carpet sealed with tape, their name and address printed by hand. Mr. and Mrs. Arthur Lewis, 217 East 37th Street, New York, New York, 10016. Norma picked it up, unlocked the door, and went into the apartment. It was just getting dark. That's the first paragraph. And I love how it just like starts and it tells you so much. We spend a lot of time with the address, but like aside from that, it starts where it needs to start, that this box, this cube with a button arrives. And then we learn so much about them. We know that they're a couple, that they live in New York City in an apartment, and that Norma is the next section she's putting dinner on. So they feel like this kind of like quintessential, like almost a 1950s housewife couple, but like
Well,
done in
she's working,
1950.
which
Yeah,
is
she's
part of
working
the,
now since
they both
1970.
have to work, you
Yeah.
know, they need more money.
Yes, but it seems at least traditional for the time, you know. Here's a normal couple, right?
Yeah.
And well, you know, the whole story is about how if they simply press this button, someone will die and they'll make 50 grand. And it's just about how the wife is more curious and she's considering this, and the husband is like, "What? Absolutely not. We're not doing that." So it just presents like a moral conundrum, which is what all good sci-fi does, right?
Yeah. Well, one thing about this that I was thinking is he introduced the button in the very first paragraph, and then we learn what the
Yeah.
button is supposed to be.
Right.
And the story's called Button Button. This is like Chekhov's button, right? Somebody has to push it. You can't have this story without somebody pushing that button. And so I was like, whoever Norma is, like whoever this person is, the character has to be the kind of person who's going to push the button. Like if you'd started writing this story and you dropped it on the doorstep of somebody, some character who would choose not to push it, like obviously Arthur would not push the button, right? So if
Right.
Arthur would lived alone, or if Arthur was in some other situation,
Not his story.
you can't write that story. You have to write a story where you have a character who's going to push this button, right?
Arthur's story would be like Arthur got a button in a box and returned it
That's
the
right. And like it could potentially raise some of the similar
Yeah.
questions, like
Not in a satisfying way.
what a weird quandary, like, you know, the philosophical questions you could ask about that, all kinds of like stuff.
Right.
But in order to have a story, he's got to push the button. Somebody has
Yeah.
to push it.
So, and by the end, she pushes it.
Yeah, she pushes it, which you have to expect that's going to happen. The
Yes.
first part of the story sets up this button. The whole story has this tension of what happens when you push the button. So we have to find that out. That is a driving force of the story. The questions they've raised and their conversations, like, how could we possibly do this and all that kind of stuff, that's like the tension. That's part of
Yeah.
the discussion. But as far as the story goes, we have to see what's going to happen when we push that button, which means the ending can't just be pushing the button. The ending
Yeah.
has to have some further kind of
Added element.
needs a twist. It needs something more than just they push the button, someone died, and they got $50,000. It has to be subverted. That's like the inevitable thing is they push the button. The surprising thing is how it plays out, right?
Yeah. And you're jumping like to my takeaway, which is like that this is, I think, one of the cleanest examples of a surprising but inevitable ending.
Oh, yes.
It's
Yes.
just one of the cleanest examples, and probably one that I'll reference from here on out, where it's short enough. This is what I mean by surprising but inevitable. Well, we talk about it all the time, and we haven't invented this, but like sometimes it's hard to like convince someone that this is like what we're talking about, that a twist ending is not surprising but inevitable, but a surprising but inevitable ending can still be satisfying. Like you said, we read this and we know someone is pressing the button. We know that means that someone will likely die. It's all in the first paragraph, and we're still reading it because we're like, well, that in and of itself is going to be exciting, whether or not it's satisfying, right? We're like, oh, what's going to happen? And
Yeah.
then to give it away, she pushes the button and her husband dies. And she's like, hold up, I know him. And the guy's like, no, you don't. Like, how well do you know anyone? Is what he says. And that's the surprising bit, right? So it's not surprising that she presses the button. It's surprising that her husband dies. It's inevitable that she would press the button. It's inevitable that someone would die. And it's only surprising, like, who specifically might die and kind of, you know, the moral implications of this like whole premise that play out. And then I thought what was unique about this, the other interesting thing is like $50,000 doesn't fall out of the sky. It doesn't get dropped on her doorstep. He has like a what's it called, like a double indemnity clause or something in his
Yes.
life insurance policy for 25,000. So like he gets like literally hit by a train or a bus or something, and she's like, oh God, here's my 50 grand, my husband's dead. Like
Well, she pushed the button and he got pushed onto the tracks. Jostling crowd, a lot of pushing and shoving. So there's kind of like a almost like a causative connection there, pushing. They're both pushing.
Yeah. So I don't know, short and sweet, and it's a good example, not just of surprising but inevitable, but like it gets into it so quickly, like you know what the story's about, and by the end it delivers. It doesn't take you on this like winding, boring, it doesn't take forever to develop. It tells you there's a
Yeah.
button in a box, and the salesman shows up within that first little section and says, yeah, if you press it, you get 50 grand and someone dies. Like it's just right there off the bat. There's none of this like clearing of the throat or like setting up the premise. It just kind of gets in there. Not I don't mean setting up like the premise, but like hinting even at the moral like conundrum, right? They just present the box and then things like unfold pretty naturally after that. And this is a short, this is very short. I don't know how many words. It's hard to tell the way this is printed.
And most of it's dialogue.
Most of its dialogue, it's broken up into these little sections with these little asterisks, and they're like scenes, but also it covers, I think, like maybe 3 days.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just amazing how much it pulls off. Like there are short stories 10 times this length that are told over the course of like seconds, and they're all in a character's head. You know what I mean? This is like, it's
Bullet in
such
the
a good
Rain.
example. Yeah. It's such a good example of just this is like, it's short and it's satisfying. It's everything you hoped it would be, and it just plays out.
Yeah. I mean, the bulk of it is the conversations. There's the incredulity, you know, like you're asking us to do what? Like, there's the kind of when she's like, well, you know, if we did push it, and Arthur says, what are you crazy?
Yeah.
Who do you think we are? You know, just her kind of wrestling with it and finally figuring out how to arrive at that moment of pushing it
Right.
comprises like the bulk of the story, right? So that
Yes.
is what the kind of, if you want to call it rising action, is talking herself into pushing it,
Right.
basically.
And the section that I read is like kind of where she kind of like decides to take the story in its own direction, right? Like when the button arrives and she and Arthur talk about it, he rips up the business card, they return the button, and it's done.
Yeah, he makes that call.
He makes that call. She's kind of like, ugh. But then she decides in that moment, like you could argue that's the moment she decides to push it,
Yeah.
to like fish the scraps of the business card out of the trash. She's like,
That's when we
ugh.
know that she's gonna get there. We're not sure how, but she.
I knew when he ripped it up and threw it away that like there was
Yeah.
still a way for her to get in touch with this man, and that she
Yes.
probably would do that, you know?
He only ripped it once.
Yes. Yeah. Oh God, you'll never find this. I would have like eaten it, been like, Norma? Yeah.
I know
Yeah. You scheming bitch. Okay. So she like takes it to work, and I love the line too, where she's like, probably like my favorite line of the whole thing. Why am I doing this? She thought. I love that. Like, 'cause it says so much. She knows why she's doing it. She's almost like fooling herself throughout, which I really like. I don't know. I loved it. And it could be something about like killing someone for 50 grand, or it could be something like even with like much lower stakes. And you're still gonna have these two types of characters, one that's like just from a gut place, no, and then one like normal. Who's like, well, but it might be worth it.
I'd be curious what your thoughts are. When I was reading about this story, because I was interested in the author. Like I said, he wrote a couple of things that are familiar in Twilight Zone episodes and stuff. But they actually produced this story for like a movie and some other things. But when they made it for the reboot of the Twilight Zone in the 80s,
Oh.
but he hated it. He helped write the teleplay, but then he took his name off of it because he didn't like the way they changed the ending. So this ending has her husband gets killed, and Mr. Stewart says, "Well, how well did you really know him? Like, did you really know him?" Whereas the Twilight Zone ending, if I have this right, it was something like they push the button, they get the money, and then the guy takes the button back and says something like, "All right, I'm going to give this button to someone you don't know." And you're supposed to take the implication that you're
They're on
probably
the
going to
hook now.
die.
Yeah.
They're going to
Yeah.
push the button and you're going to die.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you trust yourself with the decision, but not anyone else.
Yeah, so yeah, there's something to be said that, but he hated that ending. Like I said, he took his name
Yeah.
off of the teleplay and like he didn't want to be associated with it. I like this ending better, but it does have a kind of a twist to it as well.
Well, that just like kind of maybe makes the difference between can you turn this short story into a full episode, or do you need a little more, you know? Like, could you really string Norma's decision along for a 30-minute episode, or would you need there to be something that happens after this? But it just is asking the next probable question, which is how, like, what if you were Arthur? What if this is told from Arthur's perspective? You find out your neighbor got the box. Like, he knows his wife got it. He doesn't think he's on the hook at all. He doesn't think that he would be the one that would die either, because they know each other.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would get why this Richard Matheson would be like, no, you ruined the source material. But it is like kind
Yeah.
of a natural progression of the story.
Because one of the, it's the dynamics between the two of them that is the
Right.
heart of the story, right?
Yeah.
If you introduce other, like Mr. Stewart is kind of just like a whatever, but it's the two of them and it's their fight over whether or not to throw it away. And like she
Right.
secretly goes back and gets it. Like he doesn't know. And he's like, why do you keep bringing this up? Like we
Right.
talked about this. So it makes sense that he has to play a part in the ending in that way, right?
Right. Yeah, I don't know. This is, like I said, it's just the perfect example in my mind in recent memory of surprising but inevitable because it's plot based. There's a lot going on in Norma's head, but it's so brief that it's mostly about what she does and why. But it's more what is she gonna do? What is she gonna? Well, you know what she's gonna do. Like he said, this is Chekhov's button. If she doesn't push it, what the hell are we reading? So you know she's gonna press it, but it's still surprising. I think it's still satisfying. Like when I like finished the end, I was like, my only like quandary at the end there was like, it said, okay, so she destroys the box after she realizes what's happened. She gets the call that her husband's dead. She remembers the insurance policy. It's not like the money's shown up yet, but she's just piecing this together. And so she gets all pissed off, like destroys the box. And then the phone rings and it's Mr. Stewart. And she's like, you said I wouldn't know the one that died. And he says, my dear lady, do you really think you knew your husband? And my thought was like, my only problem with it was like, why is he calling?
He has to call, right? It's for the
He
story.
has to call just for that line. You know what I mean? Like that was my only kind of, so when I read it, I wasn't like, I didn't love how that part was like kind of engineered. I would have almost liked that, like instead, like he knocked on the door with the cash in his hand or something. Like, why is he calling versus like delivering it? I don't know.
Yeah, he could be a representative of the insurance company, like, here's your
Yeah,
payout.
exactly. Like something like that. Cause like I felt like he was calling just to be like, haha. I'm like, why is he calling? It'd make more sense if she called him and was, you know, reamed him out. That was my only like kind of hiccup. I was like, why else did he dial her? But yeah, I don't know. I thought this was like a good example. And I guess my takeaway being that if you think that the obvious thing can't happen in your story, you're probably wrong because that's like what people want and expect to happen.
It has to happen. Sometimes it has to
Yes,
happen.
yes. And this is an example, I think a very basic example of how it can still be surprising. It's satisfying, even though you know what's going to happen. And there's still like a twist to it. I hate these twist endings that we read all the time where people are like, haha, wasn't that clever? And it's like, well, not really, because I was expecting this other thing to happen or hoping this other thing would happen or wondering about this other thing. And it turns out they were what, red herrings? I don't know. Like, what was the point of view? Just like, it's, I don't want to read something where I'm like, oh, that writer is so clever. That's not as satisfying.
My takeaway is basically that is like how the structure was, but I was thinking about this in terms of philosophical fiction, like we talked about with the Borges story. I was like, there's speculative fiction, and under that there's like fantasy fiction, science fiction, other kinds of like climate fiction, cli-fi. And
Yes.
I swear there's got to be a category of philosophical fiction, but it's very much in the speculative genre because a lot of times it requires these speculative kind of elements, like Borges with the library, and even Ursula Le Guin's The One to Walk Away from Omelas requires like this fantastical city that's like all built around this like suffering child. In this one, the fantastical or science fiction or the kind of speculative element is this button, because when she rips it apart, there's no mechanisms in it, right?
Yes.
So she's kind of trying to reassure herself that nothing could have possibly happened. There's nothing in here, right? I
Yeah.
didn't do this, even though it's obvious she did. So it's some sort of magic or something, right? But introducing those kind of elements allows you to explore like philosophical questions. And and this one might not be the deepest philosophy, but it is something about human nature. It's about like, what are we willing to do for a reward? And like, would you kill somebody for that you didn't know? And like, obviously the twist kind of throws it back in your face. It's like the cursed wishes thing where it's like you wish for something, but you get it back in a way that's unexpected that actually makes it terrible. Anyway, all of that to say that this kind of structure, this kind of storytelling really can be useful in thinking about those kind of philosophical questions and kind of like how people work or how people understand the world or morality and these kinds of things.
Thanks, guys.
If you enjoyed this episode, consider joining our Patreon. Your support helps us keep the show running. Find out more at patreon.com/whyisthisgoodpodcast. And for industry news, writing tips, and great short fiction, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/NaplesWritersWorkshop. You can also subscribe to our monthly newsletter at napleswritersworkshop.com.